Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay in the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, please email me at bonk@aol.com, because we don't take blind calls anymore because people are very interruptive and rude. But we'd be happy to screen what you'd like to say and get you on that way. Or you can just send me questions directly for me to ask my very exciting guest for tonight. And we always know how wonderful and calming it is for us to have Dr. Brian Hooper with us. And I'll be introducing him to you in one moment. I just want to make a few announcements. First of all, next weekend we will not be on the radio because it's our healing weekend in Houston. So I will be joining my wonderful friends there and meeting some new friends as we begin our journey next weekend to just very intensely go through everything that our feelings are telling us are important to share so that we can have validation. And we're having some wonderful seminars, you know, on the second day of this, you know, helping people move ahead. So if you are really like to come, we still have room for a couple of people. Please contact me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you whatever information there is. I know that just even making a step like going to a healing conference takes a lot of courage, but, you know, it happens once a year or twice a year, and you don't want to miss this opportunity if you really need help now. This is a place you can go, and it's going to be really wonderful as far as not having to say anything and having everybody verify your feelings or validate your feelings. So it won't be on the air next Sunday night because I'll be with our women, so we'll resume in 2 weeks. I do want to mention that we do have support chats throughout the week, and if the nighttime's too difficult for you, we do have our Tuesday afternoon support chat. It's an international chat with women from all over the world, not just the United States. So if you would be interested in that, just send me your name, and I'll be happy to set you up. And I'm not going to have any other further ado without introducing my good buddy, Dr. Brian Hooper. How are you, Brian?
I'm well, Bonnie. How are you?
Good. It's always so good to, you know, hear from you, because I can't begin to tell you how many women write me. They sit there waiting for you on Sunday night when you're supposed to be there. I mean, they're just like a name.
And I'm looking forward to it. I'm sorry I couldn't make the last one, but I'm grateful I can be here tonight.
Exactly, and I am too. So have you any new issues you would like to discuss? Because if not, I have some issues I'd like to discuss.
I know you do. I've got a few things on my mind, but you know what? Let's start with you and see if we cover them, okay?
Okay. Can we talk a little bit about healing?
Okay.
Because, you know, this is really important for a lot of women, that I feel that everybody heals differently and that no two people can heal at the same rate, and that there should not be a timetable of how you heal. I think every instance is different. I know some people believe in the philosophy of forgiveness, and that helps you heal. I believe in the philosophy of acceptance, not forgiveness unless it's earned. I don't believe in blind forgiveness. That doesn't make me feel any better, but I'm not saying it's not better. That's just my personal philosophy.
That's what works for you?
Right. And I think that's why I feel that, you know, whatever works for you. But I know that some of my women who aren't really willing or ready to forgive, because, you know, they're living in really horrible situations, they just don't want to forgive. They don't want to have to be angry and bitter, but they don't want to forgive. Is that okay?
Right. Yeah, it certainly is okay. In fact, too often therapists acting from a good place push people into forgiveness before they're ready. And it's really not helpful. What they really need is somebody who can accept where they are and help them process where they are, so perhaps eventually they'll be able to get to forgiveness. I like what you say about acceptance, accepting what is. and getting out of any fantasy world that somehow if I just think about it differently, it will change. Just accept what is and then to begin to work with what is. It's very, very important.
I think the forgiveness concept, because maybe you can explain it a little better since you are also a minister, and not only a psychologist, but a minister. Does that come from a Christianity kind of concept, do you think?
Well, I think it's also not that Christianity isn't an Eastern religion, but because it certainly is, but it's also an Eastern concept as well that we see in Buddhism, and the concept of forgiveness is also, you know, part of Judaism as well. But I like the idea of beginning with simple acceptance of what is, and then beginning to ask oneself, well, where do I want to go from here? And noticing the thoughts that a person has. In other words, if one of our wonderful women is stuck kind of rehearsing over and over and over and over again what was done wrong to them, and again, I would be the last person to say they don't have a right to be angry about things, but if they're simply rehearsing it in their head and always staying in an angry and upset place, maybe they need to move to simply accepting what is and then beginning to ask, what's in my best interest? Is rehearsing all of this in my head really helpful to me? Or would I like to think about my life differently and start focusing on me and less on him? After all, he's taking up space in my head and he's not paying me any rent. And I could redecorate that space and have it much more beautiful. Know what I mean?
Uh-huh. I do, so, and I think sometimes people just can't, you know, get to that point. They become obsessed with their thoughts, and they don't want to have to be angry and bitter, but they just don't know how to move away from it. And, in fact, I was speaking with some woman today who's a newly found long-term friend of mine who, you know, has a different total situation. It's not about a gay husband, but it's, about being stuck and living in a situation you don't want to live in, and you feel so trapped, and you feel like you can't move. And the first few conversations we had, she kept saying, well, you don't understand. You don't understand what this is like. You don't understand what I'm going through. And, okay, I really don't necessarily understand because I'm not living her life, but I have a general idea. I've been in similar situations. But, you know, I think that she was just being really frustrating. You know, she felt frustrated because, you know, you're upset. And so I'm just kind of comparing the situations. You know you're upset. You know you have reason to be unhappy. And you just think you can't do anything else but be, you know, stuck and unhappy because things are going on around you. And I think you have to learn how to compartmentalize also a little bit. And I said to her, there's always a solution to every problem, even if you don't see it today. And
right.
I went through some rational, you know, kinds of things with her about, you're not going to go bankrupt. You have money saved, you know, because she was saying, I have to work another 10 years or 8 years. I said, you can't be in a job 8 years where you want to kill yourself every day that you walk in. It will wear down on your mentality altogether. So, you know, I gave her solutions, and I think she couldn't see them. You know, she was so stuck where she was that she couldn't see another way of doing things because she, first two conversations, she said, no way, I have to do this. You don't understand. But today, she was starting to say, you know what, maybe you're right. Maybe there is another way to do it. And I think,
you know,
people often
need to be heard first. I mean, I have called a friend of mine who's a mentor to me, you know, a really wonderful dear friend, a straight man, also clergy. And there have been times when I've called him and I've said, listen, I don't want any advice. I don't want any suggestions. I just need you to listen to me rant. And then when I'm done ranting, I'd love to hear what you have to offer. Because sometimes we, you know, and it's more than just 5 minutes. Sometimes I've had clients who need to kind of rehearse things a few times.
Uh-huh.
And then when they've done it like the third time, I will rehearse it back to them and say, now, is there anything else that you need to say that I haven't heard? Is there anything that I've missed out on? Well, no, I think you pretty much got it. Okay. Then I give them the option. I say, well, you know, you can sit here and we can continue to rehearse the same bad news over and over again, or we can start to begin to focus on you. And it sounds to me like that's maybe what was happening with this friend of yours, is that she was beginning to, she'd rehearsed it enough, and now she's beginning to think that she might think about the things she thinks about a little differently.
Well, I think part of it is you're definitely right. You know, the first two times we discussed this particular, you know, subject, she said to me, she got angry at me, and she said, I wasn't asking you for advice. I just wanted to, you know, express my feelings or vent, you know, how upset I am.
Right.
Oh, okay. I thought you might have, you know, I'm always, like, looking to save everybody.
But, right.
You know,
and you
like,
know, Bonnie, she wasn't
family,
she
so
really,
I'm trying to swoop, say, oh, I can,
sweetheart,
I can make that.
Let me tell you something. And even though her anger was at you, it's only because you were gracious enough to listen. Her anger is really at the other situation, and you were simply there to hear it. And she just needed to really be in a place where she could be angry. And I understand that. We all go through that. And you provided that, and then she could begin to listen to your wisdom, and I'm glad of that. That's a good thing.
Right, and I think it's a good lesson for people to learn that sometimes people do just need to let out, and they're not looking for advice at the moment. They're
That's
just
right.
Looking for a venting board, but they're upset and they need somebody to listen to. And
right. If
you're on the radar and they trust you enough to ask you to be that one to listen to them, you don't necessarily have to give any solutions, right?
That's right. I mean, the Book of Lamentations in the Hebrew scripture is what? It's a series of laments about how awful things are. And sometimes we need to write our little book of laments. And that's one thing that is rather healing for folks, is to sit down and write down their laments and get it out there. And even sometimes share it with somebody else who is willing to sit there and listen to their lament. It's a very powerful ritual to do because it gets it out there and names it, it authenticates it, it says it's valid. How many of these wonderful women who listen to you have been invalidated over and over and over again? They need somebody to validate their real lived experience. Heck, they've been told they're crazy. You know, when they catch their husbands watching porn and the husband says, I'm not gay, you know, they're watching gay porn, I'm not gay, everybody does this. You know, they get their observation invalidated. So they need somebody to just listen and validate their reality. And then when we've done that good work of validating them, then we can begin to help them look at things differently. And, you know, I want to say to the women who are listening, I want to validate your reality. You have observed. You've made honest evaluations. If you've been rehearsing what happened to you over and over and over again, and it feels like a broken record even in your own head, then I want to encourage you to begin to change some of where you place your focus. Don't forget. I wouldn't encourage people to forget what's happened. They need to learn from that. But to put that in the back of the file cabinet in their brain and to start beginning to focus on themselves and where they want to go and how they're going to take care of themselves and what they can do to bring just a little bit of joy every single day into their lives. Even if it's just, you know, buying an inexpensive, bouquet of flowers at the supermarket and bringing it home. Do something to take care of yourself, to affirm yourself, to love yourself.
And
that's,
I think that's a very big key, is learning to love yourself again, right?
That's right. That's right.
Sometimes you've never loved yourself enough, so you have to start.
That's right, because some of our listeners, to be honest, didn't think they deserved better. And they married somebody. They may even have had an inkling that something was wrong from the very beginning, but they thought, well, nobody else is going to come along. And I want to say to them, this time, let's really love you. You love yourself. Take care of yourself. Never compromise again. Never compromise again.
Uh-huh.
So you know, there's several things people can do. Do you want to move on towards that and talk about some specific things people can do to try to work on letting go and beginning to heal again?
I do. Go right ahead. You can start with that.
Okay. Well, you know, first of all, I would ask that your listeners just check out how they think about things in life. They might want to ask, do they engage in all or nothing thinking? In other words, is everything all good or all bad? You know, oh, nothing ever good ever happens to me. It's always bad. Well, is that true? Isn't there something that was good that happened today? Is there something that's beautiful that you can focus on or good? You know, did your kid look at you and say, you know, I love you, Mom? That's a good thing. Even if the hot guy down the street that's straight that you're interested in didn't, you know, particularly notice you, did your kid look at you today and say, I love you? Then let's be grateful for that. Let's avoid the all or nothing at all thinking. What about when people say positive things? Do you accept those positive things about you, or do you discount them and say, oh, no, you know, that's not really true. I'm not attractive, or I really don't look good in this old thing that I'm wearing. And, you know, accept the positives when they come.
Okay, there's something up about maybe you can explain it. Can you explain a little bit? So many people, when they get a compliment or something positive about them, they, and I'm not going to lie to you about this, Brian, I used to be the same way, and I'm even probably a little bit like it still today, you feel embarrassed to have to take a compliment.
Right.
You don't, you can say, oh, thank you so much for saying it. You have to make like, well, it's like, you know, I used to say, when somebody would say they like something about me, well, you know, I'm using a different brand. I like give an explanation, like you just don't deserve a compliment. You know what I'm talking
right.
about?
Right, or something like, oh, that's very kind of you to say, as if it's some sort of handout they're giving, rather than
exactly.
It's genuine. You know, I would, and that's a great example, Bonnie. If you catch yourself saying that, simply say, you know what, I'm not going to say that anymore. I'm going to look at somebody who compliments me, and I'm going to say, thank you, you just made my day. You're awesome.
Uh-huh.
And accept it and treasure it. And it's a gift back to the other person when you can really accept it and let them know that you appreciate it. They feel good. It's a win-win. It goes both ways. So let's everybody practice. You may be just listening to this on Blog Talk Radio and nobody's there to hear you, but here's what you're going to say. Thank you. You just made my day. And you smile.
Uh-huh.
At it. All you got to say. All you got to say.
And feel
there's
that you
no
deserve it. Somebody saying nice, something nice to you, they're seeing something in you that you may not be seeing in yourself.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you're the first person who ought to be loving you. It's not the last person who should be loving you.
Uh-huh.
You know? And it's hard. I mean, Louise Hay... And some of your listeners may have heard of her and her good work. Louise Hay talks about looking in the mirror, and she said it's so simple, but it's so hard for people to do, to look in the mirror and call yourself by name and say, Brian, I love you, and I'm going to take good care of you. To make eye contact with yourself. I challenge your listeners to do that every day, to look in the mirror and say, I love you. And call themselves by name. I love you, Mary. I love you, Beth.
Uh-huh.
I love you, Anne. I love you, Bonnie, and I'm here for you, and I'm going to take care of you. Because if people will do that every day, when those negative thoughts come up, something in the neurology will go back to, no, that's not how I start my day. That's not how I live my day. I love me. I don't need these negative thoughts. They're not helpful.
Uh-huh. And I think it's so easy to succeed in life because we do have a lot of external pressures every day. We're living in a very driven society. Would you say so?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's funny. I was getting my hair cut the other day, and there was a women's magazine in there. I looked at the woman who was cutting my hair, and I'd forgotten what it was. And I looked at the person on the cover of the magazine, this model, and lovely face, you know, beautifully dressed. And I said, look at her waistline. Look at that. There's something wrong. It looked like a bust sitting on a pedestal. It was abnormal looking. It was bizarre. And I said to her, what is that saying to women who look at this? I mean, and trust me, it's there for men as well as for women. It's not the same thing for men, but there are all sorts of cues that are given that say you must be this way, you must be that way, or you're not good enough. It's there for us as well. It's there for everybody. So what I would encourage folks to do is start to be clear about what their deepest values are and to look at themselves and say, listen, I have this wonderful heart that's capable of love. I'm going to share that love with everyone I possibly can, and that's where my beauty is going to radiate from. And it's going to touch my external beauty as well. And people will pick up on that. They will see that. And you will feel better about doing life that way, coming from a place of love towards all people. Absolutely. Now, I when I check out at the supermarket, I don't care if it's male, female, it doesn't matter to me. I'll look at them and I'll say, how are people treating you today? I hope you're having a good day. And it's amazing how many times, you know, I will get very honest answers. And people very rarely look at them because they're on their cell phone. They didn't even get off their cell phone. Very rarely are these people asked, how is the world treating you? So you can go from being a place of being a victim to a place of being one who actually lifts others as well. And I would encourage folks to do that. It will raise their own sense of self-esteem and their own sense of feeling good about themselves.
Now, keeping in line with that, Brian, I read a wonderful article today, and I know it kind of struck me differently today. And it's from one of the health magazines, and it's called How to Show You Care. And it says, What do you say to someone who's depressed? All too often it's the wrong thing. People still have a cloudy idea of what mental illness is, says Catherine Brannon of, you know, Virginia. Sometimes what people will say, oh, you're depressed? Yeah, I've been depressed. And you realize that, you know, it's just the way they say it, like, no, it's just not quite the same thing. It's not like I'm feeling sad or blue. So they give a list of things that you should say to people, which I think is really interesting. So, for instance, you know, they have 10 things you should say. Like, for instance, one is, I'm here for you, that you should say that. What to say is, you're not alone in this. And what not to say is, there's always someone worse off than you are.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't help.
Which I think is, like, invalidating somebody's, you know, feeling. The next one is, when they talk about the subject of you matter, is saying what to say. You are important to me. But not to say is no one ever said that life was fair.
Right.
Isn't that true?
That's true.
So the next one says, let me help. Now what you should say is, do you want a hug? What not to say is, stop feeling sorry for yourself. And the next one is what to say when that depression is real. But to say, you are not going crazy. What not to say is, so you're depressed, aren't you always?
Ugh.
I mean, I do really hear a lot of people saying these things they shouldn't be saying.
Or
I hope
snap
it says,
out of it. Snap out of it. Get a grip and snap out of it, yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
They tell it to our women all the time. What to say, here's another one. We are not on this earth to see through one another, but to see one another through. And what not to say is, try not to be so depressed.
Right.
And then the next one is when somebody says, you can survive this. What you should say is, when all of this is over, I'll still be here and so will you. But not to say, it's your own fault.
Yeah.
And the next one says, I'll do my best to understand. This is what to say. I can't really understand what you are feeling, but I can offer my compassion. But not to say is, believe me, I know how you feel. I was depressed once for several days.
Right. So,
and
you know, what,
the next one is for you,
okay,
won't drive away. It says, what to say, I'm not going to leave you or abandon you. And what not to say is, I think your depression is a way of punishing us, you know, and getting attention.
Right.
And then for I care about you, what to say, I love you. Say this only if you really mean it. And what not to say is, haven't you gotten tired of all this me stuff yet?
Mm-hmm.
And this one is, we'll get through this together. What to say, I'm sorry that you're in so much pain. I'm not going to leave you. I'm going to take care of myself. So you don't need to worry that your pain might hurt me. What nice not to say is, have you tried chamomile tea?
Yeah.
And the last one is, well, that was the last one. But what do you think of those?
Well, what I noticed in common with all the ones of what not to say, they tend to be statements that have the ego of the speaker involved, and they're not identifying with the experience of the person who is feeling depressed. So I simply, to sort of summarize all of the good statements, would sort of boil down to, wow, it seems like this is a really difficult time for you. I care about you greatly. I don't know what I can do, but I'm here for you. And I really mean that. I'm not just saying that. I really want you to feel, call me anytime, day or night, if there's anything I can do, even if you just need to hear another voice, I'm here for you. Because what it is, it's about showing up in the person's life and being available to them and not judging them. That's the problem. And advice always comes off as judgment. Advice is different than wisdom. You know, this unsolicited advice comes off as judgment because, of course, if I had thought of doing what you're telling me to do, I'd be okay. But clearly, there must be something wrong with me because I didn't think about doing what you've just told me to do. So it comes off as judgment. But when I say to somebody, wow, this is really a hard time for you. I'm so sorry. If there's anything I can do to be available to you, you let me know. I'm here for you. You call me. In fact, I'd like it if we can touch base next Tuesday and you let me know how you're doing. That's very helpful. You know, so they know, oh, you really care enough to check in. And then if you say that, follow through and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to understand. You know, a lot of our women go through situational depression, so it's
sure.
not a chronic condition or it's not physiologically involved. I mean, it's because of the situation that they're in, and it's easy to do that. We had this conversation the other day, should people use medication? And I always feel there's another way to do it great, because I don't believe in numbing yourself out to get through a situation. And I don't think that it makes sense to have to stay in a marriage by taking medication. I feel like
right.
something's really wrong with that. And I'm not
right.
just talking about straight gay. I'm talking about any kind of marriage. But sometimes people need an antidepressant to get them through an emotionally difficult time. And I understand that as long as you're not counting on that to be the solution for the problem, because that doesn't work. I think, you know, there has to be time limits and some control and some therapy that goes with this. Do you agree with that or no? Am I okay with that?
I completely agree with that. I'm not anti-pharmaceutical, but I believe that for most people, aside from those who have a systemic chemical imbalance, as do some bipolar folks, that antidepressants, if they're taken, should simply be a means of support until the person can make the cognitive and lifestyle changes that they need to make in order to be okay. And all the research is showing us today that cognitive therapy is more powerful in the long run alone than just antidepressant therapy or anti-anxiety medical, medication therapy alone is.
Can you explain to people who are not familiar with therapy what cognitive therapy is?
Sure. So a cognition is simply another word for a thought. And cognitive therapy helps people take a look at how they think about the things they think about. So if they're engaging in things like all or nothing thinking, one of the things I mentioned earlier, or overgeneralizing, or discounting the positives, or jumping to conclusions, or minimizing good things that are said to them or done, or magnifying little things so they become out of proportion. These are all cognitive distortions, and people need psychotherapy to look at how it is they're distorting their reality by how they're thinking about it and get their thinking more in line with reality. So that's what cognitive therapy does. It helps people think about the things they think about in new, different, more positive, more creative, more life-sustaining kind of ways. It's part of a very important part of the psychotherapy that I do with all of my clients.
Mm-hmm. And is it something that's an ongoing, long process?
Well, the goal of cognitive psychotherapy is to address whatever the issues are that bring the person to therapy in the first place, and then give them the tools to do their own therapy as they move through life. So, we don't want to have people, certainly I don't want to have people dependent upon me. I want to help them invest their time and their money so that they're getting some tools that they can use once they're out of therapy and take care of themselves. So, for instance, I learned quite a while back that when I start getting anxious about somebody who I'm interested in going to call me, are they not going to call me, why hasn't the phone rung yet, and maybe they're not interested, when I begin to find that I'm going to those old patterns, I have a way now to break that process, to let it go, to calm myself, to change my focus, and to move in a more positive direction. And where I used to have to really work hard at it, because I've done my own therapy and because I practice it, now I do it like turning on and off a light switch. It's much easier. So we give people the tools so they can do it for themselves and use it for the next new issue that comes up.
Yes, I know that I've developed a technique for myself that I find really effective that wouldn't work for everybody, trust me. But it does work
for
some.
Well,
what's
for you? What do you do?
I use a blocking technique.
Okay,
never
so
negative.
Tell the folks about that.
Huh?
Tell your listeners about your blocking technique and how it works for you. Let's talk about that.
Once again, it doesn't work for everybody, but, I certainly have had a lot of negative things happen in my life that were beyond my control, like the loss of my two children.
Right.
And I don't think there's any greater tragedy than that, not to compare tragedies because everybody is valid. But
how we handle it is different.
Yeah. The grief of a child is different than grieving over a parent or a husband. But the thing is that when unpleasant thoughts would come to my mind in the beginning, it was very often. And that's to be expected, but I couldn't just keep it going on and on because I could never function that way. I would have rolled up on my bed and been, like a baby myself and not been able to do anything. So I started trying to block any kind of memories at all in the beginning. I couldn't even let good memories in. I didn't want any memories. I just wanted not to think about my children because the pain was so great, that even good things, people would say to me, oh, you got to, think about good things for your children. You had so many wonderful times together. Well, that was, once again, advice giving that I wasn't looking for.
Right.
I didn't ask people, how do I heal from this? Because nothing they could possibly say to me would make me feel any better, even though they had all good intentions, don't get me wrong. I mean, I got
sure.
to the point where some days I would take the pictures of my children that were all over my house a few times, and I just put them down. I didn't
mm-hmm.
want to look. I didn't want to see. I didn't want to think. I didn't think
right.
if I would see their faces, and I'd have to think of them. So I
right.
began just blocking thoughts. And in the beginning, I was blocking all thoughts because I couldn't even let good thoughts come into my mind because
mm-hmm.
that was even worse sometimes. Or, you know,
mm-hmm.
the bad thoughts, you know, just thinking about horrible things at the end of both of their ends. So then as time went on, you know, that did work for me. I just tried to not think about it, not look at the pictures, not remember good times, not remember anything. I had to do that for a while just to get myself on track. And maybe it was a defense mechanism, or maybe it's just because I was just too sorrowful all the time thinking about them. And, in fact, I went to some grief meetings in the beginning when my daughter passed away. They have a group called Compassionate Friends for
mm-hmm.
anyone who's lost a child for any reason. And they're wonderful people. I can't tell you how compassionate these people really are. But
mm-hmm.
Every week they would, or every month they would come to these meetings and take out pictures of their kids and put them up there. And to me, that was just even more depressing, although it works for some people. So
mm-hmm.
I couldn't heal that way, and that's why I say everybody has different ways to heal. For me, I didn't want to look at the pictures. I wanted to block them. Was it right,
right.
or was it wrong? I don't think it matters. Whatever works for you, works for you. Then
right.
eventually,
yep.
you know, I was able to start letting some memories come back. You know,
mm-hmm.
that I wouldn't block out everything, so I let some of the good memories come back so that I could take some joy in, you know, the past that we had and
yeah.
not focus on any of the negative things. So it's worked for me. You know, it doesn't mean I don't get sad and that I don't get depressed sometimes because I think it's a normal reaction. But
mm-hmm.
I have to try to, even when I get that low, I block it and try to do something positive. You know, my philosophy in life is that everybody has a purpose. You just have to find your purpose, and you can keep moving on. But
mm-hmm.
if we can find what we're here for and that people need us for something, instead of just focusing on ourselves, try to extend ourselves a little to other people, that's what motivates me to keep moving ahead and to keep those images now positive. You know, I can think about my kids and, you know, to think of good times. I still block the bad times, I'm not going to lie to you, but that's my coping mechanism. So I think that everybody copes differently with all these problems, and that's okay. What works for me may not work for the next person. Like I said, with the acceptance and the forgiveness, if acceptance works for me, I can accept any situation. But I feel sometimes like forgiving people for the crimes they've done to you, I mean, not just in this situation, but anyone, like a woman who gets raped, you know, by a stranger, or
mm-hmm.
someone who's had their family killed in some kind of, you know, upsetting manner. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't feel that necessarily forgiving's always the answer, because sometimes I think you feel more like a victim when you forgive. And even though people say, well, you're not really forgiving that person, you're letting it go, I still feel if I would do that, I'd be victim, you know, feel like more of a victim. But that's me. You know, I've had other people on here like Dr. Francine Barbetta. You know, she's a very big believer in forgiveness, and it works for her. So I can't say, well, she's wrong. She's right for her. But that's
why
I tell
people.
What I hear
what you're saying that really works for you are two things. One is acceptance, and the other is, as Viktor Frankl taught us so wisely, to find meaning in life,
mm-hmm.
to find meaning and purpose. That's what
exactly.
got him to the concentration camp. That's
mm-hmm.
what made him the doctor, you know, the 20th century doctor of the soul, was his emphasis in logotherapy of finding meaning in
mm-hmm.
in life. And
I'm a very big believer in his work.
Yeah, very, very important work. Some of your readers might be interested in just even just Googling Dr. Viktor Frankl and reading
mm-hmm.
about his work as a source of inspiration. And then
mm-hmm.
acceptance. Acceptance doesn't mean I agree with something. Acceptance
right.
doesn't mean it's a good thing. Acceptance simply says, simply acknowledges what is. And to a certain extent, there's a spiritual approach, if I may, for just a moment. And I'm one who never puts my religion on other people, so I'm not preaching at people. I'm just sharing what I believe is a spiritual insight that can be used by people regardless of what the religion is. So I think acceptance is about saying yes to the divine who is with us in the midst of whatever our situation is. It's not saying the situation is necessarily good, but it is saying yes to all that is good in the universe that comes into our situation with us and begins to shed light in the midst of what feels very dark. And that can
be very
powerful.
I think acceptance, I really like it because it means you can accept what is, realize
right.
that you can't change it. It
right.
doesn't mean that you ask for it to happen, it happened. It's not like
right.
you have to get all hung up on feeling anything guilty or anything, you know, negative. I think it's a positive connotation
yes.
where I feel that forgiveness, although it sounds positive, sometimes I think it can have a more negative effect on you. Because then a lot of times you're starting to feel guilty, you know, just blindly forgiving. Maybe I did something to provoke this that I have to blindly forgive someone. And I think a lot of women just get very angry when they hear that word forgiveness because they can't forgive. But they can accept and not have to be angry anymore all the time. That's not to say
right.
you can't feel angry about the situation, but you can't dwell in the anger because that anger will become bitterness. And I've
exactly.
seen that happen, Brian.
If we dwell in the
I
anger,
really have.
If we dwell in the anger, it will become bitter. And mm-hmm. it will turn people's hearts to stone. And then it makes them unavailable to themselves and to others. And by the way, I don't think forgiveness, when people do forgive, I don't think it's something that they can kind of force to have happen. I think what happens is one day they realize that they've simply forgiven and they've moved on. And when that comes for folks, it's lovely. But I can't prescribe that you or anybody else has to have that experience on my timetable. See, that's the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I said, it may work for some people. Some of my women feel very strongly about it, and I think that's fine. But and whatever works for each person, we're all different. You know, one
right.
thing I did learn from my sister Valerie, and, you know, I think I've mentioned her once or twice to people. You know, I have a sister who's 9 years younger than I am, and she
okay.
was struck with multiple sclerosis when she was 13 years old.
Mm.
And usually people don't get MS until their late 20s or 30s.
Yeah.
So
right.
she was like the youngest recorded case in the state until a few years ago when somebody younger than she was diagnosed. But anyway,
yeah.
when she got her MS, you know, really it didn't start affecting her until she was in her 20s. She had vision problems, you know, in her younger years, but they told her it was something else so she wouldn't feel overwhelmed by that term, multiple sclerosis.
Right.
So by the time she hit her 20s, you know, she had to find out the truth. And
uh-huh.
she was a fighter. My sister Valerie is like the greatest fighter. She was like my hero because she never let anything get her down. And as she
uh-huh.
started deteriorating more and more, you know, then she couldn't walk anymore. She needed to take, you know, a walker.
Right.
And then after a while,
right.
the walker wouldn't work, so she'd be in a wheelchair. Now,
oh,
you know, now she's in a state of her, like, final phases of life where she's almost comatose. You know, she doesn't recognize us anymore. She doesn't respond. You know, she's just laying there.
Yeah.
No quality of life at all. But
right.
what I really admired about her over these, you know, I guess 30-some years of deterioration, when I would feel so bad for her because she would keep going to work, falling down steps. She didn't want to give up. You know, she never wanted to give up. She wanted that independence and to feel valued as a person.
Right.
So her company finally asked her not to come back because she was a front office image and they thought it wasn't a good image. And I understand
right.
that too. But the point is that she had a lot of years to deteriorate and I loved her attitude because she could have felt very angry and very bitter like I would have, to be honest with you. not being able to do anything and having to live in diapers and people taking care and changing them. But her philosophy, her, you know, I say to her, Val, I feel so bad. She says, well, why do you feel bad? I said, I don't know. Look what you're going through. It's so unfair. And her philosophy was so simple, and it was, excuse my language, shit happens.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was just her, that's their answer all the time. Don't worry about it. Shit happens. And I thought, what a wonderful way to think.
Yeah.
You know, that life can be that simple, that you're not looking to blame anyone, that you're not looking to place the blame here or there, that tragedies do happen. People have all kinds of terrible things happen to them. And yet, to take the attitude like, you know, it's just life, you know, it's just the luck of the draw, the shoot of the craps, you know, that nobody knows what they're going to get in this world.
Yeah.
And she tried to make the best out of her limited, you know, ability of having any quality of life for those years. You know, she never gave up. And that's why I guess she's still alive, you know, even though she can't do anything or eat or do anything, but she's not giving in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why she's always been my hero. But I think her philosophy a lot of times helps me.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can't personalize that these things happen, although a lot of times our women are feeling, I must have done something wrong. There must be a reason why this happened. How could I have been so stupid? You know, why couldn't I see this coming? What was all this going on? Where was I? And I think if you just take that philosophy that stuff happens, you just don't have those many choices in life. It's not like you made a mistake. The marriage may be a mistake, but you didn't purposely make a mistake. You went into it with, you know, good feelings and with, you know, that everything would be wonderful. If it doesn't work out, though, you can't say, well, maybe I could have done this differently, that differently. Not with this. You can't do anything differently, right?
That's right. That's right. And I think that's
no
where...
No way to change sexuality, correct?
That's right. You know, what, as I say to people, you can't change from gay to straight or straight to gay. What you do have choice over is what you do with the hand you've been dealt, the cards you're playing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So do it with integrity. Figure out what your deepest values are and be true to yourself. And that's the best that... You know, we can ask our wonderful women to do is to ask how do I do the best I can with what I've got to work with from here on.
Right, and it's a matter of just thinking positively ahead for yourself. Which when you're drowning, I know that's so hard. I know that one of our members who I really love, she's one of my heroes, also raising a whole family on her own, pretty much,
mm-hmm.
and being stopped at every turn. By, you know, her
yep.
soon-to-be ex-husband trying to just take, he just tries to take control and take all the sensibility, like it's a power struggle. She's not struggling, you know, but he is. You know, he doesn't want his secret
right.
coming out, so he wants to control all the environment around him.
Right.
And, you know, I think, like, it's so hard for women sometimes to see beyond the muck when they're in it,
of
that
course.
There can never be a bright day again. But, you know, life isn't fair, and it's not fair for her, for sure. But I think that, you know, after the event, you have to realize this is just what I have to deal with, and how am I going to make it work for me?
How do I work?
Try to turn that tide, right?
Right. Yeah, I had correspondence the last couple of days with one of your listeners who we had a phone session a year or so ago, and in many ways she's doing well, but unfortunately her ex-husband, because they have children together, you know, he's still, of course, in their lives and in
mm-hmm.
her life, and instead of acting with integrity now, he's still denying and
mm-hmm.
still just causing problems, being not being respectful of her. And one has to wonder, is it, you know, sort of vindictive kind of stuff? But what she has to realize is, you know, okay, this is what I've got to work with. He's going to be in my life because he's going to be in the kids' life until they're all adults and then probably beyond. So how do I work with is? and take care of myself in the process.
And it's difficult, for sure.
Yeah.
It is difficult. And I'll tell you something else since we're on the subject of what's bothering me tonight. Thanks, Brian.
Okay.
For the therapy. But I'll tell you another thing that really bothers me. There are some people who have no choice in anything because of religion and the hypocrisy of some religions. And I'm speaking for Christianity, Judaism, and Muslim.
Uh-huh.
I've been doing a lot of work this week with some people who come from religious backgrounds that are not Christianity. And it's like across the board, no religion has any tolerance at all for people who are gay. You know, religious fundamentals on the people.
Or the spouses who unwittingly marry the gay man or the lesbian woman. They don't, the religion ends up condemning them. Well, we've talked about that. We talked about that recently. That happens. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so sorry to hear that. I mean, when I look at the root of religion is the Latin word religio, and it means that which reconnects us to our origins, to our deepest sense of self, to the divine. Religion isn't meant to bind us up, but it's really meant to reconnect us to what gives life. So when religion is used in a way that's manipulative and controlling and mean-spirited, it's the very opposite of what it was intended to do.
And the worst part was I looked it up on the computer because, for me, I talked to some people, and they said, well, if you look in the Bible, no matter whose Bible you're looking at, you know, it all says the same thing. I said, does it? And sure enough, I looked it up, and sure enough, it does. Whether it was the Jewish Bible, the Christian Bible, it was the same thing, saying that if the biggest crime is if a person's gay, they should be killed. Well,
yeah,
I think, how do you beat that? I mean, like, what is it with people thinking this is okay to think about that?
So, first of all, I think that we're looking at an ancient piece of Middle Eastern literature when we're looking at the Hebrew scripture, and we need to read it in its context as well. What folks don't realize is that it wasn't until the early 1900s that the word homosexual was even coined by a German, I believe it was a German physician. I know it was a German. So that when we read the word homosexual in either the Christian Bible or the Hebrew Bible, we're reading, it's really an anachronistic reading. It's reading back into it a word that we have coined that has a meaning that's not exactly what was meant in the Hebrew or the Christian scripture. And, I mean, we could do a whole show just on that, but I'll tell you what, if your readers are interested and they want to send me an email, I will send them a paper that I wrote that deals with those specific passages from the Hebrew and the Christian scripture. I was asked to write it by the pastor of my church, and I've had many people say it's very helpful. They can send me an email, brian@drbrianhooper.com, requesting the paper, and I'll happily send it to them.
Right, and if you couldn't get that address, write to me at bonk@AOL, and I'll forward your email to Brian.
Perfect, perfect.
But it's just, once again, we always say, well, things, not you personally, but people say, you know, things are changing, they're getting so much better. And I know they're better. I'm not going to say they're not better, but how do we ever move really ahead when you have so many people who have these fundamentalist beliefs who are just so condemning? You know, so I just don't get how things will really ever change on this issue.
When we have a state legislature that recently contemplated whether or not you could decide to reserve service from in an establishment for folks who are gay and lesbian based on your religious beliefs. In other words, I'm a bakery, and I refuse to sell you some make good because, you know, it's against my religion because you're gay or lesbian, well, all of a sudden, I mean, that begins to sound like a very primitive way of living. I mean, you know, how far away from that is saying, well, I'm going to refuse to serve you because of the color of your skin because it's against my religion, or, you know, it's no way to live.
Mm-mm, it's not. And that's why I say I'm really, I don't have any answers. All I know is that we have to just keep trying to educate people, you know, keep having the same battles over and over again. But, you know, for everyone that will listen to you, then maybe some change will take place. You know, this isn't easy on so many different ends. And like I say, time is going on, even though I know a lot of people say, oh, it's so much better today than it used to be. And once again, I'm not saying no, it's not. But I'm not saying that it's great. It's improved in certain ways.
It's not great. And it's not great. And it's not great for gay and lesbian people. And there's a whole lot of other people it's not great for yet either. My hope is that when being gay or lesbian really is no big deal anymore and it is completely mainstream, I hope that I and the rest of my, you know, gay brothers and lesbian sisters will not forget our roots and that we'll also work to, you know, work for fair treatment of other people who still aren't liberated. We've all got to work together. That's what, you know, I just as an aside, I am a Christian man who believes that we must continue to remember the Holocaust because this kind of thing, the horror of it, has to be remembered so that we remind people why we don't do this kind of thing, and yet it still happens. You know,
everywhere.
The genocide of Rwanda, for instance.
Horrible.
But we have to work. Anyway, that's kind of an aside from what we're here to talk about, but we all need
Brian
to work
together. Brian and I are becoming social activists of the world now, right?
What was that?
Because you and I are
going
to become the social activists of the world. Well, you know what? I always tell people you got to put in a little more than you're taking out. You know, it really helps if you do something to make a difference in this world. And it doesn't have to be anything.
You'll feel better about yourself if you do.
You know, you do, and that's one way to start rebuilding self-esteem. I always tell women, you know, building self-esteem is a long process, but there are some things you can do to kind of speed that up. You know, when you do something that helps others and they appreciate it and you can see you made a difference in someone's life, you know, that's the first step in feeling better about yourself. You know, the more you focus on...
I agree with you, and I have a corollary that goes with that, and I tell people self-esteem is the relationship you build with yourself, the relationship and reputation, the reputation you build with yourself so that you not only feel good about helping other people, you feel good about the reputation that you're beginning to build with yourself, and we begin to believe that reputation, and that's a good thing. Yeah.
Exactly. So, any final words before we go?
Accept yourselves wherever you are. Accept what is in you and love the you that you meet in the mirror. And I dare you, look in the mirror. Call yourself by name this week and say every morning for a week, I love you and I'm going to take care of you. Go do it.
I think that's all. Well, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and look at my mirror and say, I love you, Bonnie.
Bonnie, I love you. Absolutely. Absolutely. I love you, Bonnie. I really do. And I'm so grateful to be on your show. Thank you so much. I'm
grateful to have you as part of our support system. It's such an important part because I know women love you. And men who listen to you, they love you too. So, Brian, thank you so much. And I'll be back again with you in another 4 weeks talking about more interesting things. But to all our listeners, on behalf of Brian and me, we would like to say good night. Right, Bri?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, and I'll be back in 2 weeks. Good night.